special welcome to those of you who are here for the very first time visiting us. We're glad that you're here. We hope you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you to find and keep your balance, a place which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. Following the service, you're invited for refreshments and fellowship in the parish hall. There you can meet new friends and old, visit our bookstall, and stop by the many information tables. If you're interested in learning more about becoming a member of Unity Church, please visit the welcome table that is in the parish hall. Also, our children's and adult libraries are open after every service and available to you. There's a wonderful collection of books there. Those libraries are on the second floor of the Elliott Wing. Join us this Wednesday for Wellspring Wednesdays. Dinner is at 6 o'clock. There's a short worship service at 6:45 and classes at 7:15. Our featured speaker this Wednesday is Kate Cavett, author of The Voice of Rondo, looking at the history of the Rondo community in this area. Following this service in the center room, there will be an information session about the upcoming trip to New Orleans in March. If you're interested in going on this trip or would like to know more, please go to the center room after this service. And if you are willing to give an occasional ride to a Unity Church member, someone who is not able to be here because of unreliable or no transportation, there's a sign-up sheet on the welcome table in the parish hall, and it would be a way that maybe once a month you could help someone in this community be a part of this community. If you are able to help give a ride, please put your name down there and we'll be in touch with you. I also want to let you know that next Sunday will be the official end of this year's pledge drive. It's been going for a little while, as you know. And as you also know, it is your pledges, your financial commitments that support Unity Church. You should know that at this point we are about $60,000 short of our goal. So if you haven't yet made your pledge, I invite you to consider what this church means to you, how its programming and worship and classes have touched your lives, and how it inspires you to lead a life of integrity, service, and joy. And of course, if you feel like increasing your pledge, that's fine too. Next Sunday, Teresa Schwartz and worship associate Dick Bubbs will lead the service entitled Deep Democracy. Services are at 9, 11, and 4:30. Finally, at the conclusion of the service, Teresa and I would like to greet you at the Portland Avenue doors. Once again, welcome to Unity Church.
I'm going to sing when the Spirit says sing. from death to life, from falsehood to truth. Lead us from despair to hope, from fear to trust. Let peace fill our hearts, our world, our universe. Let us dream together, pray together, work together to build one world of peace and justice for all. Come, let us worship together.
Number 580.
The central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens, and our strength is renewed.
Every Sunday when we gather, we set aside time to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together, we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this sacred place. Our hearts are with all those who live with grief and with chronic pain, with those who have illnesses seen and unseen, those who live with addiction, those who care for family members in ill health, and those who knowingly face their final days with courage. This morning, our hearts are especially with Eleanor Felker, whose grandson died unexpectedly last week. We hold in our prayers Phil Dorn, who fell and cracked a rib last week as well. We hold in our hearts Katie Rivard, who is home from a successful surgery and recovering. prayers are with Alex Chandler, who will be having surgery this Wednesday to remove cancerous tumors. May we stand in compassionate solidarity with our neighbors all around the world who suffer in the midst of habitual violence. May they and we be instruments of a lasting peace. I now invite you to share the names of those people that you would like to celebrate or memorialize or hold in the embrace of this sacred community. For the names which have been spoken and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our heart, may we be forever grateful for the lives that have touched ours. And let us pray together. Holy One, source of love and life that goes by many names, we gather as one body today to celebrate and remember all that we have, and to rededicate ourselves to those things worthy of our deepest commitments. We give thanks for fellowship and laughter in our lives, because it is fellowship and laughter that truly feed our spirits. We give thanks for the many hands and kind words that have supported us during moments of loss and grief, because it is love and kindness that heal our spirit. We give thanks for the opportunity to serve this world, to sing, to volunteer, to share our gifts with those around us, because it is in giving that we truly receive. This morning we give thanks for life, for fellowship, for laughter, for family and friends, for the chance to do our part, to play our note in the music of life. Amen. Thank you. aside time in our service this morning to honor and recognize those who help make Unity Church the welcoming place that it is. I would like to invite Meg Garnasty and Alan Giles to please come forward.
Every Sunday, for each service, a group of volunteers gathers to welcome members, friends, and visitors to Unity. They greet people at the door, set up coffee and tea service, hand out orders of worship, and take the offering.
Unity Church Unitarian has over 150 volunteers who staff the 12 welcoming teams. Each volunteer serves one service a month. Fifth Sundays are covered by special teams comprised of ward members, coming-of-age participants, covenant groups, and other members willing to serve once a year.
Today, we'd like to recognize all the volunteers who have served on a welcome team in the past year. Your service is so important to the well-being of this church. Would all the welcome team members please stand so that the congregation can show its appreciation?
Please sign up at the welcome table in the parish hall today after the service, or contact Laura Park at the church office. We also invite you to join us for the annual welcome team potluck on Saturday, February 10th. Thank you.
Thank you, Meg and Alan. We've been giving away our offering every Sunday to important organizations in the community and around the world who are doing significant life-changing work. Our offering this morning will go to the Open Cities Health Center, an organization that was founded in 1967 by people of color to primarily serve. It was the first medical clinic with the intention of primarily serving people of color and expanded to include all people in need of medical care and assistance, whether or not they had insurance or health coverage. This organization exists in our own community, just up the street on University and Dale, that area, that corner right there. And a member of our church, Vivian Stone, serves on the board of this organization. So I hope that you will give generously to this local, significant organization. Will the ushers please come forward? May this offering be a blessing and a gift to those who receive it.
Thank you.
Arch Piercy. What can they do to you? Whatever they want. They can set you up. They can bust you. They can break your fingers. They can burn your brain with electricity. Blur you with drugs till you can't walk, can't remember. They can take your child, wall up your lover. They can do anything you can't blame them from doing. How can you stop them? Alone you can fight. You can refuse. You can take revenge. You can, but they roll over you. But two people fighting back to back can cut through a mob. A snake dancing file can break a cordon. An army can meet an army. Two people can give each other sanity, can give support, conviction, love, massage, hope, sex. Three people are a delegation, a committee, a wedge. With four, you can play bridge and start an organization. With six, you can rent a whole house, eat pie for dinner with no seconds, and hold a fundraising party. A dozen makes a demonstration. 100 fill a hall. 1,000 have solidarity in your own newsletter. 10,000, power in your own paper. 100,000, your own media. 10 million, your own country. It goes on, one at a time. It starts when you care to act. It starts when you do it again after they say no. It starts when you say we, and you know who you mean, and each day you mean one more.
In 1966, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was the General Assembly's Ware Lecturer. There he talked about this term called creative maladjustment. He said, in part, "Yes, I must confess that I believe firmly that our world is in dire need of a new organization. The International Association for the Advancement of Creative Maladjustment. Men and women as maladjusted as the prophet Amos, who in the midst of the injustices of his day cried out the words that echo across the centuries. Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream." Yes, as maladjusted as Abraham Lincoln, who had the vision to see that this nation could not survive half slave and half free. As maladjusted as Thomas Jefferson, who in the midst of an age amazingly adjusted to slavery, cried in words lifted to cosmic proportions, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." As maladjusted as Jesus of Nazareth, who could say to the men and women of his day, "He who lives by the sword will perish by the sword." Through such maladjustment, we will be able to emerge from the bleak and desolate midnight of man's inhumanity to man into the bright and glittering daybreak of freedom and justice.
Thank you.
may not get there with you, the true Martin Luther King Jr. Michael Eric Dyson recalls a sermon that he heard at Riverside Church. Is this on for you all? Okay. So the book is I May Not Get There With You, The True Life of Martin Luther King Jr. Michael Eric Dyson hears this sermon at Riverside Church. It wasn't James Forbes that was preaching, however. It was Charles Adams, a friend of James Forbes. And halfway through the sermon, Charles Adams turns his attention to the Martin Luther King Day holiday. And this was a sermon in July. And he talked about the forces that seek to twist King's memory and thwart his progressive agenda. He went on in this sermon, "Perhaps the easiest way to get rid of Martin Luther King Jr. is to worship him, to honor him with a holiday that he never would have wanted, to celebrate his birth and death without committing ourselves to his vision or his love. It is easier," Charles Adams went on, "to praise a dead hero than to recognize and follow a living prophet." Dick Gilbert, a Unitarian Universalist minister and one of my teachers at Meadville Lombard, tells a story about a minister who preached at the church that Franklin Roosevelt attended when he was president. The minister received a phone call one Saturday evening, and the caller asked, "Will the president be in church tomorrow?" And the preacher paused a moment and said, "Well, I'm not sure, but we do expect God to be there. And I think that's sufficient reason for good attendance." Dick Gilbert follows this story with something from Soren Kierkegaard. "Too often in their churches, people adopt an attitude of the theater, imagining that the preacher is an actor and that they, the congregation, are his or her drama critics. But he offers this corrective. Actually, the people are the actors on the stage of life, and the preacher is merely the prompter, reminding the people of their lost lines. And it is the holy that is the critical audience." At least, that's the hope. That's the dream. It's easier to hero worship or to be a drama critic, which is perhaps why generation after generation, prophets and sages try to remind us of our lost lines. Their ongoing effort suggests that we have the ability, that somewhere deep inside we know what really matters in our lives, in our living together. Those lines we have forgotten, but that we are often a willful, resistant people. Today, let us listen to these living prophets, those whose vision might lead us to a world of peace and justice, to a world where the beloved community is real. It was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. who popularized this term, beloved community, but he was not the first to use it. That distinction belongs to Josiah Royce, a late 19th century professor of philosophy. Royce imagined the beloved community as an ideal, as a group of people who came together deeply committed and dedicated to the cause of loyalty and truth and reality itself. Yet long before Royce and King spoke of beloved community, this sense of possibility of what could be has been a yearning in the human heart. Perhaps an earlier version of the beloved community begins with Moses, the stuttering, reluctant leader of the Israelites, who leads them from slavery out of Egypt. As you remember, Moses has a mountaintop experience with God, where he receives the Ten Commandments, as well as this continued vision and promise of this place where his people will rest in peace, where food will be plentiful, where there will be harmony among them all. He has this mountaintop experience, and he comes down the mountain, and maybe he says to his people who are now building golden calves and questioning his leadership, maybe he says, well, at least we got the commandments down to 10. Because there's a 360 sort of commandments in Deuteronomy, so it's 10 now. But then he looks around and he sees his people who have built the golden calf and who are saying, Moses, we don't want to follow you anymore. He's back in the mucky muck of the world, but the dream of the promised land calls to him. And so for 40 years, he leads his people through the desert trying to reach this promised land, helping his people remember their lines, their sacred covenant with one another. He doesn't give up. And as he nears the end of his days, he stands atop a mountain right next to the promised land. He can look down and see the promised land. But he dies there, just short of the dream. Certainly, Jesus, as a subversive wisdom teacher, speaks and acts out of a politics of compassion. And he rallies against what he saw as the great evil of his time, the politics of purity. As author Marcus Ward says, this inclusive vision is in Jesus' table fellowship is reflected in the shape of the Jesus movement itself. It was an inclusive movement, negating the boundaries of the purity system, those rules and regulations that denied a person's worth and dignity, and continually harmed women, untouchables, the poor, the maimed, and the marginalized. In a society ordered by this strict purity system, which separated the whole from the broken, the saved from the unsaved, and the rich from the poor, Jesus' movement revealed a very different social vision. With this new vision, Jesus sought to usher in the kingdom of God, a new socio-political reality in which everyone could sit at the welcome table. this morning, I want to extend a special welcome to those of you who are here for the very first time visiting us. We're glad that you're here. We hope you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you to find and keep your balance, a place which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. Following the service, you're invited for refreshments and fellowship in the parish hall. There you can meet new friends and old, visit our bookstall, and stop by the many information tables. If you're interested in learning more about becoming a member of Unity Church, please visit the welcome table that is in the parish hall. Also, our children's and adult libraries are open after every service and available to you. There's a wonderful collection of books there. Those libraries are on the second floor of the Elliott Wing. Join us this Wednesday for Wellspring Wednesdays. Dinner is at 6 o'clock. There's a short worship service at 6:45 and classes at 7:15. Our featured speaker this Wednesday is Kate Cavett, author of The Voice of Rondo, looking at the history of the Rondo community in this area. Following this service in the center room, there will be an information session about the upcoming trip to New Orleans in March. If you're interested in going on this trip or would like to know more, please go to the center room after this service. And if you are willing to give an occasional ride to a Unity Church member, someone who is not able to be here because of unreliable or no transportation, there's a sign-up sheet on the welcome table in the parish hall, and it would be a way that maybe once a month you could help someone in this community be a part of this community. If you are able to help give a ride, please put your name down there and we'll be in touch with you. I also want to let you know that next Sunday will be the official end of this year's pledge drive. It's been going for a little while, as you know. And as you also know, it is your pledges, your financial commitments that support Unity Church. You should know that at this point we are about $60,000 short of our goal. So if you haven't yet made your pledge, I invite you to consider what this church means to you, how its programming and worship and classes have touched your lives, and how it inspires you to lead a life of integrity, service, and joy. And of course, if you feel like increasing your pledge, that's fine too. Next Sunday, Teresa Schwartz and worship associate Dick Bugs will lead the service entitled Deep Democracy. Services are at 9, 11, and 4:30. Finally, at the conclusion of the service, Teresa and I would like to greet you at the Portland Avenue doors. Once again, welcome to Unity Church.
life from falsehood to truth. Lead us from despair to hope, from fear to trust. Let peace fill our hearts, our world, our universe. Let us dream together, pray together, work together to build one world of peace and justice for all. Come, let us worship together.
The central task
of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens, and our strength is renewed.
Every Sunday when we gather, we set aside time to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together, we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this sacred place. Our hearts are with all those who live with grief and with chronic pain, with those who have illnesses seen and unseen, those who live with addiction, those who care for family members in ill health, and those who knowingly face their final days with courage. This morning, our hearts are especially with Eleanor Felker, whose grandson died unexpectedly last week. We hold in our prayers Phil Dorn, who fell and cracked a rib last week as well. We hold in our hearts Katie Rivard, who is home from a successful surgery and recovering. In And our prayers are with Alex Chandler, who will be having surgery this Wednesday to remove cancerous tumors. May we stand in compassionate solidarity with our neighbors all around the world who suffer in the midst of habitual violence. May they and we be instruments of a lasting peace. I now invite you to share the names of those people that you would like to celebrate or memorialize or hold in the embrace of this sacred community. For the names which have been spoken and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our heart, may we be forever grateful for the lives that have touched ours. And let us pray together. Holy One, source of love and life that goes by many names, we gather as one body today to celebrate and remember all that we have, and to rededicate ourselves to those things worthy of our deepest commitments. We give thanks for fellowship and laughter in our lives, because it is fellowship and laughter that truly feed our spirits. We give thanks for the many hands and kind words that have supported us during moments of loss and grief, because it is love and kindness that heal our spirit. We give thanks for the opportunity to serve this world, to sing, to volunteer, to share our gifts with those around us, because it is in giving that we truly receive. This morning we give thanks for life, for fellowship, for laughter, for family and friends, for the chance to do our part, to play our note in the music of life. Amen. Thank you. service this morning to honor and recognize those who help make Unity Church the welcoming place that it is. I would like to invite Meg Arnasty and Alan Giles to please come forward.
Every Sunday, for each service, a group of volunteers gathers to welcome members, friends, and visitors to Unity. They greet people at the door, set up coffee and tea service, hand out orders of worship, and take the offering.
Unity Church Unitarian has over 150 volunteers who staff the 12 welcoming teams. Each volunteer serves one service a month. Fifth Sundays are covered by special teams comprised of ward members, coming-of-age participants, covenant groups, and other members willing to serve once a year.
Today, we'd like to recognize all the volunteers who have served on a welcome team in the past year. Your service is so important to the well-being of this church. Would all the welcome team members please stand so that the congregation can show its appreciation?
Please sign up at the welcome table in the parish hall today after the service, or contact Laura Park at the church office. We also invite you to join us for the annual welcome team potluck on Saturday, February 10. Thank you.
Thank you, Meg and Alan. We've been giving away our offering every Sunday to important organizations in the community and around the world who are doing significant life-changing work. Our offering this morning will go to the Open Cities Health Center, an organization that was founded in 1967 by people of color to primarily serve. It was the first medical clinic with the intention of primarily serving people of color and expanded to include all people in need of medical care and assistance, whether or not they had insurance or health coverage. This organization exists in our own community, just up the street on University and Dale, that area, that corner right there. And a member of our church, Vivian Stone, serves on the board of this organization. So I hope that you will give generously to this local, significant organization. Will the ushers please come forward? May this offering be a blessing and a gift to those who receive it.
Thank you.
The Low Road by Marge Piercy. What can they do to you? Whatever they want. They can set you up. They can bust you. They can break your fingers. They can burn your brain with electricity. Blur you with drugs till you can't walk, can't remember. They can take your child, wall up your lover. They can do anything you can't blame them from doing. How can you stop them? Alone you can fight, you can refuse, you can take revenge. You can, but they roll over you. But two people fighting back to back can cut through a mob. A snake dancing file can break a cordon. An army can meet an army. Two people can give each other pain, sanity, can give support, conviction, love, massage, hope, sex. Three people are a delegation, a committee, a wedge. With four, you can play bridge and start an organization. With six, you can rent a whole house, eat pie for dinner with no seconds, and hold a fundraising party. A dozen makes a demonstration. 100 fill a hall. 1,000 have solidarity and your own newsletter. 10,000, power and your own paper. 100,000, your own media. 10 million, your own country. It goes on, one at a time. It starts when you care to act. It starts when you do it again after they say no. It starts when you say we, and you know who you mean, and each day you mean one more.
In 1966, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was the General Assembly's Ware lecturer. There he talked about this term called creative maladjustment. He said, in part, "Yes, I must confess that I believe firmly that our world is in dire need of a new organization. The International Association for the Advancement of Creative Maladjustment. Men and women as maladjusted as the prophet Amos, who in the midst of the injustices of his day cried out the words that echo across the centuries. Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream." Yes, as maladjusted as Abraham Lincoln, who had the vision to see that this nation could not survive half slave and half free. As maladjusted as Thomas Jefferson, who in the midst of an age amazingly adjusted to slavery, cried in words lifted to cosmic proportions, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." As maladjusted as Jesus of Nazareth, who could say to the men and women of his day, "He who lives by the sword will perish by the sword." Through such maladjustment, we will be able to emerge from the bleak and desolate midnight of man's inhumanity to man into the bright and glittering daybreak of freedom and justice.
Thank you.
may not get there with you, the true Martin Luther King Jr. Michael Eric Dyson recalls a sermon that he heard at Riverside Church. Is this on for you all? Okay. So the book is I May Not Get There With You, The True Life of Martin Luther King Jr. Michael Eric Dyson hears this sermon at Riverside Church. It wasn't James Forbes that was preaching, however. It was Charles Adams, a friend of James Forbes. And halfway through the sermon, Charles Adams turns his attention to the Martin Luther King Day holiday. And this was a sermon in July. And he talked about the forces that seek to twist King's memory and thwart his progressive agenda. He went on in this sermon, "Perhaps the easiest way to get rid of Martin Luther King Jr. is to worship him, to honor him with a holiday that he never would have wanted, to celebrate his birth and death without committing ourselves to his vision or his love. It is easier," Charles Adams went on, "to praise a dead hero than to recognize and follow a living prophet." Dick Gilbert, a Unitarian Universalist minister and one of my teachers at Meadville Lombard, tells a story about a minister who preached at the church that Franklin Roosevelt attended when he was president. The minister received a phone call one Saturday evening, and the caller asked, "Will the president be in church tomorrow?" Preacher paused a moment and said, "Well, I'm not sure, but we do expect God to be there. And I think that's sufficient reason for good attendance." Dick Gilbert follows this story with something from Soren Kierkegaard. Too often in their churches, people adopt an attitude of the theater, imagining that the preacher is an actor and that they, congregation, are his or her drama critics. But he offers this corrective. Actually, the people are the actors on the stage of life, and the preacher is merely the prompter, reminding the people of their lost lines. And it is the holy that is the critical audience. At least, that's the hope. That's the dream. It's easier to hero worship or to be a drama critic, which is perhaps why generation after generation, prophets and sages try to remind us of our lost lines. Their ongoing effort suggests that we have the ability, that somewhere deep inside we know what really matters in our lives, in our living together. Those lines we have forgotten, but that we are often a willful, resistant people. Today, let us listen to these living prophets, those whose vision might lead us to a world of peace and justice, to a world where the beloved community is real. It was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. who popularized this term, beloved community. But he was not the first to use it. That distinction belongs to Josiah Royce, a late 19th century professor of philosophy. Royce imagined the beloved community as an ideal, as a group of people who came together deeply committed and dedicated to the cause of loyalty and truth and reality itself. Yet long before Royce and King spoke of beloved community, this sense of possibility of what could be has been a yearning in the human heart. Perhaps an earlier version of the beloved community begins with Moses, the stuttering, reluctant leader of the Israelites, who leads them from slavery out of Egypt. As you remember, Moses has a mountaintop experience with God where he receives the Ten Commandments as well as this continued vision and promise of this Satan looks around and he sees these people who have built this golden calf and who are saying, Moses, we don't even know if we want to follow you anymore. He's back in the mucky muck of the world, but the dream of the promised land calls to him. And so for 40 years, he leads his people through the desert trying to reach this promised land, helping his people remember their lines, their sacred covenant with one another. He doesn't give up. And as he nears the end of his days, he stands atop a mountain right next to the promised land. He can look down and see the promised land. But he dies there, just short of the dream. Certainly, Jesus, as a subversive wisdom teacher, speaks and acts out of a politics of compassion. He rallies against what he saw as the great evil of his time, the politics of purity. As our